Chapter 57. An heavy archway. They paused beneath it, rang a bell, and waited. Over the archway was written in Egyptian capitals, County Gal. ... The small rectangular wicket, which was constructed in one of the two iron-studded doors, was opened from the inside. The men severally stepped over the threshold, the coffin dragged its melancholy length through the aperture, and both entered the court, and were covered from sight. Somebody in the gal, then? ... Yes, one of the prisoners, ... said a boy, scudding by at the moment, who passed on whistling. Do you know the name of the man who is dead? ... inquired Baker of a third bystander. Yes, 'tis all over town, surely you know, Mr. Springrove? Why, Manston, Miss Alcliffe's steward. He was found dead the first thing this morning. He had hung himself behind the door of his cell, in some way, by a handkerchief and some strips of his clothes. The turnkey says his features were scarcely changed, as he looked at them with the early sun a shining in at the grating upon him. He has left a full account of the murder, and all that led to it. So there's an end of him. ... It was perfectly true. Manston was dead. The previous day he had been allowed the use of writing materials, and had occupied himself for nearly 7 hours in preparing the following confession. Last words. Having found man's life to be a wretchedly conceived scheme, I renounce it, and, to cause no further trouble, I write down the facts connected with my past proceedings. After thanking God, on first entering my house, on the night of the fire at Carriford, for my release from bondage to a woman I detested, I went, a second time, to the scene of the disaster, and, finding that nothing could be done by remaining there, shortly afterwards I returned home again in the company of Mr. Ronham. He parted from me at the steps of my porch, and went back towards the rectory. Whilst I still stood at the door, musing on my strange deliverance, I saw a figure advance from beneath the shadow of the park trees. It was the figure of a woman. When she came near, the twilight was sufficient to show me her attire. It was a cloak reaching to the bottom of her dress, and a thick veil covering her face. These features, together with her size and gait, aided also by a flash of perception as to the chain of events which had saved her life, told me that she was my wife Eunice. I gnashed my teeth in a frenzy of despair. I had lost Cytherea. I had gained one whose beauty had departed, whose utterance was complaint, whose mind was shallow, and who drank brandy every day. The revulsion of feeling was terrible. Providence, whom I had just thanked, seemed a mocking tormentor laughing at me. I felt like a madman. She came close, started at seeing me outside, then spoke to me. Her first words were a proof for what I had unintentionally done, and sounded as an earnest of what I was to be cursed with, as long as we both lived. I answered angrily. This tone of mine changed her complaints to irritation. She taunted me with a secret as he had discovered, which concerned Miss Alcliffe and myself. I was surprised to learn it, more surprised that she knew it, but concealed my feeling. How could you serve me so? She said, her breath smelling of spirits even then. You love another woman, yes, you do. See how you drive me about. I have been to the station, intending to leave you forever, and yet I come to try you once more. An indescribable exasperation had sprung up in me as she talked. Rage and regret were all in all. Scarcely knowing what I did, I furiously raised my hand, and swung it round with my whole force to strike her. She turned quickly, and it was the poor creature's end. By her movement my hand came edgewise exactly in the nape of the neck as men strike a hare to kill it. The effect staggered me with amazement. The blow must have disturbed the vertebrae. She fell at my feet, made a few movements, and uttered one low sound. I ran indoors for water and some wine. I came out and lanced her arm with my penknife. But she lay still, and I found that she was dead. It was a long time before I could realize my horrible position. For several minutes I had no idea of attempting to escape the consequences of my deed. Then a light broke upon me. Had anybody seen her since she left the three tranters? Had they not, she was already believed by the parishioners to be dust and ashes. I should never be found out. Upon this I acted. The first question was how to dispose of the body. The impulse of the moment was to bury her at once in the pit between the engine house and waterfall, but it struck me that I should not have time. It was now 4 o'clock, and the working men would soon be stirring about the place. I would put off burying her till the next night. I carried her indoors. In turning the outhouse into a workshop, earlier in the season, I found, when driving a nail into the wall for fixing a cupboard, that the wall sounded hollow. I examined it, and discovered behind the plaster an old oven which had long been disused, and was bricked up when the house was prepared for me. To unfix this cupboard and pull out the bricks was the work of a few minutes. Then, bearing in mind that I should have to remove the body again the next night, I placed it in a sack, pushed it into the oven, packed in the bricks, and replaced the cupboard. I then went to bed. In bed, I thought whether there were any very remote possibilities that might lead to the supposition that my wife was not consumed by the flames of the burning house. The thing which struck me most forcibly was this, that the searchers might think it odd that no remains whatever should be found. The clinching and triumphant deed would be to take the body and place it among the ruins of the destroyed house. But I could not do this, on account of the men who were watching against an outbreak of the fire. One remedy remained. I arose again, dressed myself, and went down to the outhouse. I must take down the cupboard again. I did take it down. I pulled out the bricks, pulled out the sack, pulled out the corpse, and took her keys from her pocket, and the watch from her side. I then replaced everything as before. With these articles in my pocket I went out of the yard, and took my way through the winding copse to the churchyard, entering it from the back. Here I felt my way carefully along till I came to the nook, where pieces of bones from newly dug graves are sometimes piled behind the laurel bushes. I had been earnestly hoping to find a skull among these old bones, but though I had frequently seen one or two in the rubbish here, there was not one now. I then groped in the other corner with the same result. Nowhere could I find a skull. 3 or 4 fragments of leg and backbones were all I could collect, and with these I was forced to be content. Taking them in my hand, I crossed the road, and got round behind the inn, where the couch heap was still smoldering. Keeping behind the hedge, I could see the heads of the 3 or 4 men who watched the spot. Standing in this place I took the bones, and threw them one by one over the hedge, and over the men's heads into the smoking embers. When the bones had all been thrown, I threw the keys, last of all I threw the watch. I then returned home as I had gone, and went to bed once more, just as the dawn began to break. I exulted, Etheria is mine again. At breakfast time I thought, suppose the cupboard should by some unlikely chance get moved today. I went to the mason's yard hard by, while the men were at breakfast, and brought away a shovelful of mortar. I took it into the outhouse, again shifted the cupboard, and plastered over the mouth of the oven behind. Simply pushing the cupboard back into its place, I waited for the next night, that I might bury the body, though upon the whole it was in a tolerably safe hiding place. When the night came, my nerves were in some way weaker than they had been on the previous night. I felt reluctant to touch the body. I went to the outhouse, but instead of opening the oven, I firmly drove in the shoulder nails that held the cupboard to the wall. We'll bury her tomorrow night, however, I thought. But the next night I was still more reluctant to touch her. And my reluctance increased, and there the body remained. The oven was, after all, never likely to be opened in my time. I married Cytherea Gray, and never did a bridegroom leave the church with a heart more full of love and happiness, and a brain more fixed on good intentions, than I did on that morning. When Cytherea's brother made his appearance at the hotel in Southampton, bearing his strange evidence of the porter's disclosure, I was staggered beyond expression. I thought they had found the body. Am I to be apprehended, and to lose her even now? I mourned. I saw my error, and instantly saw too, that I must act externally like an honorable man. So at his request I yielded her up to him, and meditated on several schemes for enabling me to claim the woman I had a legal right to claim as my wife, without disclosing the reason why I knew myself to have it. I went home to Knapwater the next day, and for nearly a week lived in a state of indecision. I could not hit upon a scheme for proving my wife dead without compromising myself. Mr. Ronham hinted that I should take steps to discover her whereabouts by advertising. I had no energy for the farce. But one evening I chanced to enter the Rising Sun Inn. Two notorious poachers were sitting in the settle, which screened my entrance. They were half drunk. Their conversation was carried on in the solemn and emphatic tone common to that stage of intoxication, and I myself was the subject of it. The following was the substance of their disjointed remarks. On the night of the great fire at Carriford, one of them was sent to meet me, and break the news of the death of my wife to me. This he did. But because I would not pay him for his news, he left me in a mood of vindictiveness. When the fire was over, he joined his comrade. The favorable hour of the night suggested to them the possibility of some unlawful gain before daylight came. My fowl house stood in a tempting position, and still resenting his repulse during the evening, one of them proposed to operate upon my birds. I was believed to have gone to the rectory with Mr. Ronham. The other was disinclined to go, and the first went off alone. It was now about 3 o'clock. He had advanced as far as the shrubbery, which grows near the north wall of the house, when he fancied he heard, above the rush of the waterfall, noises on the other side of the building. He described them in these words: ghostly mouths talking, then a fall, then a groan, then the rush of the water, and creak of the engine as before. Only one explanation occurred to him: the house was haunted. And, whether those of the living or the dead, voices of any kind, were inimical to one who had come on such an errand. He stealthily crept home. His unlawful purpose in being behind the house led him to conceal his adventure. No suspicion of the truth entered his mind till the railway porter had startled everybody by his strange announcement. Then he asked himself, had the horrifying sounds of that night been really an enactment in the flesh between me and my wife? The words of the other man were, "Why don't he try to find her if she's alive?" "True," said the first. "L, I don't forget what I heard, and if she don't turn up alive my mind will be as sure as a Bible upon her murder, and the parson shall know it, though I do get 6 months on the treadmill for being where I was. And if she should turn up alive? Then I shall know that I am wrong, and believing myself a fool as well as a rogue, hold my tongue." I glided out of the house in a cold sweat. The only pressure in heaven or earth which could have forced me to renounce Cytherea was now put upon me: the dread of a death upon the gallows. I sat all that night weaving strategy of various kinds. The only effectual remedy for my hazardous standing that I could see was a simple one. It was to substitute another woman for my wife before the suspicions of that one easily hoodwinked man extended further. The only difficulty was to find a practicable substitute. The one woman at all available for the purpose was a friendless, innocent creature named Anne Seaway, whom I had known in my youth, and who had for some time been the housekeeper of a lady in London. On account of this lady's sudden death, Anne stood in rather a precarious position, as regarded her future subsistence. She was not the best kind of woman for the scheme, but there was no alternative. One quality of hers was valuable: she was not a talker. I went to London the very next day, called at the Hoxton lodging of my wife, the only place at which she had been known as Mrs. Manston, and found that no great difficulties stood in the way of a personation. and thus favoring circumstances determined my course. I visited Anne Seaway, made love to her, and propounded my plan. We lived quietly enough until the Sunday before my apprehension. Anne came home from church that morning, and told me of the suspicious way in which a young man had looked at her there. Nothing could be done beyond waiting the issue of events. Then the letter came from Ronham. For the first time in my life I was half indifferent as to what fate awaited me. During the succeeding day I thought once or twice of running away, but could not quite make up my mind. At any rate it would be best to bury the body of my wife, I thought, for the oven might be opened at any time. I went to Casterbridge, and made some arrangements. In the evening Miss Aldclyffe, who was united to me by a common secret which I have no right, or wish to disclose, came to my house, and alarmed me still more. She said that she could tell by Mr. Ronham's manner that evening that he kept back from her a suspicion of more importance even than the one he spoke of, and that strangers were in his house even then. I guessed what this further suspicion was, and resolved to enlighten her to a certain extent, and so secure her assistance. I said that I killed my wife by an accident on the night of the fire, dwelling upon the advantage to her of the death of the only woman who knew her secret. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.